Welcome to Stirring the Pot. You are listening to the voice of Vashon, 101.9 FMLP, right here in Uptown Vashon Island. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host today. In the studio with me are three special people. I'm my co-host, and who are you?
She's really special.
Celine Dion.
Yeah. You've done that before.
I know. My co-host is Celine Demir. Hello, Celine.
Hello, my dear.
I'm glad to see you. And our intrepid engineer, Heidi Skrypek.
Hello.
Hi, Heidi. And our guest for today is Elijah Berry, who's the new owner of the Vashon Baking Company. Hello. Yeah,
hi.
And welcome, hello. Elijah. We're glad you're here.
Thank you
for being here. Well, so today we're going to cover a variety of subjects. As usual, Stirring the Pot is a random sampling of what we love about food, how cooking flavors our lives, and what things we may have discovered along the way. For all of us, the indelible tastes of life continue to amuse and amaze. So I hope you can pull up a chair and listen as we explore stories and ideas about food, friends, and family. So first of all, let's get caught up. What's been going on? What have you been doing? Heidi, what's been going on in your world?
I was in England watching my friend Mary Singer swim across the English Channel.
I know you were.
She
did it.
So amazing. Brutal conditions, force five winds, nighttime.
What's the water temperature?
That wasn't bad. 66.
Okay.
That was
okay.
I mean, but yeah. 14 hours in 66 in
was
just a
it?
Bathing suit.
Oh, wow. Man.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
So did that. Then we went to Wissant, France on the Opal Coast, had some pain au chocolat and some delicious cappuccino.
Nice.
And then, and some French food, moule frites. I love mussels and fries. So delicious.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever had that.
Yes, it's a thing on the French
like
coast.
Like in the same, it's like not two separate things?
It's just a dish that's like steak frites, but it's moule frites instead.
Moule is in a mussel.
Oui.
Oh.
And it was so tasty. And they serve it with like a mayonnaise sauce. Anyway, I digress. But did that, went to San Francisco, swam Alcatraz. And then came home to a garden that needs a lot of cleanup.
Yeah, your garden does. Well, I'll come and help you clean up. I'll come and help you harvest some of that stuff.
Yes.
Are your squash ready yet?
Sweet potato squash. I'd say they need 2 or 3 more weeks.
Okay, well, call me then and I'll come and help.
Okay, well.
She's not coming to help.
There's
you
a commission.
That.
Yeah, you got it.
And what's been going on with you, Miss Celine?
So lately, Alara and I have been going to Seattle Storm games. So this, my daughter is a huge fan of Seattle Storms, and we've been volunteering. And when you volunteer there, you get to stay for the games. So,
oh, how nice!
Yeah, so that's we have been doing for the past month. And unfortunately, they're not going to the playoffs, but it's been fun to.
So, what do you do when you're volunteering?
So whenever they give out items to the fan, the first 5,000 that shows up, there are giveaways.
Oh.
So we just do the giveaways for the hour and a half. Yeah.
How fun.
Yeah. So it's kind of fun. And that's how we kind of get to be at the game. And we've been having lots of fun. And we raised, last Friday was the Storm Out Cancer Night. And we raised the highest 50-50 raffle cash prize.
Wow.
Wow. That was pretty awesome. And then the funds goes to the Cancer Patients Assistance Funds.
So. Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was very nice. So it's been busy.
You been cooking anything interesting?
You know, I've cooked my favorite summer dish when you somebody was giving out free zucchinis. By nothing.
Yes, everyone's giving out free zucchinis.
You know what? This year, not a lot of people gave.
Oh.
Previous years, I've gotten a lot more free zucchinis than this year. Let me tell you.
Yes. I hear the words out.
Yeah. There was not a lot of zucchinis this year in the island.
Okay. Mine dudded out.
They did. Yeah.
They just stalled. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, too bad.
There wasn't a lot this year. Mm. I can tell you.
So what's this dish you cooked?
So you cut the zucchinis in like rounds and then you fry them. And then I went and I got some eggplants and I did the same thing with the eggplants. And then Thriftway has these peppers. They're like sweet and kind of long. They look like banana peppers, mm-hmm. but they're like orangey, ready. And then so I fried them too, and then I put them in there, and then fried some potatoes.
Oh my goodness.
And then I made this very garlicky, chunky tomato sauce and poured all over it.
Ooh.
Oh my God, it's so good with Ulud's fresh bread.
Mm-hmm.
And then garlic yogurt.
Of course.
Of course. Yeah. And then the dish tastes so much better the next day.
As most things do that you cook like that.
Oh my God. So yeah. We've been kind of enjoying that every evening, like a little by little and then kind of mm-hmm. as a side dish to different dinners.
That's a perfect sort of end of summer, moving into autumn.
It's a very common summer dish in when I was growing up in Turkey. So, and then when I saw this zucchini and I told Delicious, we should make this. Mm-hmm. And he goes like, oh yeah, I'm all for it.
Oh, good.
That's what we made. Yeah. And we've been enjoying. That's what I cooked last time.
And what about you, Elijah? What have you been up to?
Barbecue.
Oh,
so that's been my sort of grilling side project as well.
What are you doing?
Well, we just had our second pop-up at Pop Pop.
I heard about that. How'd it go?
Oh, really well.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that I've missed probably the most since moving out here. That was 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of a dearth of barbecue in the Pacific Northwest, at least of the style that I kind of prefer.
And how long does it take to do those ribs?
6 hours.
Yeah.
So the ribs are 6 hours. The pork shoulder for pulled pork's around 8 hours.
Wow. That just sounds so good. Are you going to continue doing it at Pop Pop?
I think we're going to look at maybe October for Pop Pop, but then I'll be doing sort of my own here and there.
Oh.
So eventually get into more of a cadence. But
cool.
There's a lot going on at the bakery too, so I got to pace myself.
I know. Well, I love barbecue, and I've had quite a lot of different kinds of barbecue, and boy, I'm going to come and check that out.
Please do.
It sounds delicious.
Do you have a special sauce?
Yeah, so I mean again it's like it's not special to me because it's very much what I was used to growing up in that kind of Southwest Missouri corner. But if you've had like Casey Masterpiece, I'd say it's pretty similar to that.
Oh, I love that.
So not as much vinegar as you'd expect further east. Not as sweet as you'd get some other places, maybe a little further north of Missouri. But just that very rich kettle cooked molasses and tomato and sugar.
I love that.
I love that.
Yeah, there's some of those on the East Coast are really vinegary, and that's not my favorite.
That.
But
no,
I know people
either.
Really love that too. But I'm more of a Casey Masterpiece girl.
Yeah. And then Memphis is just the dry rub, so it's a little bit.
Oh, how
for me,
nice!
I need a little bit more on there.
Yeah, how nice! That's wonderful. So let's talk about the end of summer a little bit, and what we're gonna miss about summer food. Have you got anything on your mind, Celine, that you might miss now that we're waning?
Peaches.
Yeah, the peaches.
And watermelon.
Uh-huh. You know, isn't it interesting?
I've been making lots of watermelon salads this year.
You did a watermelon feta something that was
I did that
cucumbers
a lot this summer. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's not
great.
really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to miss tomatoes. You know, tomatoes are my thing. And you only get about 2 weeks of really good tomatoes here in the Northwest.
Yeah.
But man, have they been good this year. I wonder, and I should talk to a gardener about this. Maybe Heidi would know. Is it something to do? I mean, they've been good in the past, but this year I think they're outstanding. And I'm wondering if it has to do with the fact that the nights stayed kind of hot as well as the heat we had. Because I know they love dry heat. I know they love that. But I don't know. Do you?
It is good for ripening and big, full tomatoes. But honestly, diurnal shift, cooler nights and warm days give you a full flavor and some acidity.
Okay.
So when you have too much warmth, you don't get a lot of acidity. And the same thing happens to berries.
Oh.
Yeah.
So well, that's another thing that was wonderful this year with the blackberries.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Still coming.
I know, they're still here, and they're big and juicy and wonderful. I haven't made a blackberry pie yet, though.
Oh,
I did go tackle a blackberry bush the other day. I was at a friend's house.
Haven't we all?
That's a good visual, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was at a friend's house just having coffee, and she had huge blackberries kind of coming over the fence. And I said, "Are you picking those?" And she said, "No." She said, "I'm scared of them." And I said, "Well, I'm going to go pick some." So I went out there to pick them, and wouldn't you know, I got in the stinging nettle.
Oh.
Oh. Yes,
but I never saw it, you know, and it was only on my hands and my forearms. It wasn't on my leg. It wasn't like stepping in it, but they must have been growing entwined because I sure didn't see. Oh my, that was not a good evening. No. It was not a fun evening at all. Mm-mm-mm. And I don't know what the remedy for that is.
Time.
Yeah.
Hydrocortisone.
Mm-hmm. I did put some on. It helped, but it didn't cure it by any stretch. Anything you're going to miss about summer, Elijah?
I've got such a good year with rhubarb. We had maybe 100 pounds that I bought for the bakery. Just local rhubarb, and we're almost through it now. So we're switching out, going to strawberries and blueberries for some other things. But
are you doing rhubarb pie? Is that what you did, or what are you doing with it?
We did rhubarb pie. We did rhubarb as a topping for our kind of danishes, the cream cheese croissants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then also for Strawberry Festival, I used a fair amount of it in lemonade.
Oh,
so that's kind of really nice, tart rhubarb lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's nice because you can sort of use the the juice that you'd get from the rhubarb that we use for other things. So we just had this sort of
nice
kind of concentrated jar of bitter or sour sweetness. Oh,
did you know there's such a thing as rhubarb ketchup?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. It's the same ingredients, except it's rhubarb and not tomatoes.
Huh.
It's
huh.
so good.
I did know that the Heinz 34, at some point they were making that many varieties of
were they?
Or 57. What's
Heinz
57? That's 57. It.
I was going to say Heinz 34. Yeah. I need to learn about that.
Well, Missouri, we didn't get the other 23 yet. They're working on it for
us. Yeah. Tomatoes, I guess. And that's kind of what I'm thinking about. So let's move into fall. And what are you looking forward to with autumn food, Celine?
Well, orange is my favorite color.
I know.
If you don't know that already.
I do know that.
And I love the pumpkins and orangey food, you know. I love the fall feeling, but let's see. What else as far as the fall concerns?
Well, you have a special squash you like.
Yes.
What is it called? Do you remember?
What's the name of it? Oh my gosh, Heidi, you helped me because it was all gray and then...
Oh, Hubbard.
Hubbard, yes.
Pumpkin.
Thank you. Yeah, Hubbard pumpkin.
Yeah.
So, and I saw that Langley has them. So we're going to go, I just saw they put the sign up. So this weekend we're going to go and get it.
Oh, and so tell me what you do with that.
Oh, I make that special dessert, Turkish pumpkin dessert that you got to enjoy.
Oh. It killed me. It is so good. Celine was swearing that if you use this other kind of pumpkin, it won't taste the same. And I said, oh, come on, it's got to be the same. So she used two different pumpkins. She used the Hubbard and she used whatever else it was.
Yeah.
A nice, good orange squash. It was a good one, whatever it was. And presented to me side by side and tell me which one you like the best. And boy, there was a big difference.
Sweeter.
Sweeter and deeper, more deeply flavored squash, and so it's like candy.
Wow. Yeah,
it's just a beautiful, beautiful dessert.
Good.
It's
so
a Turkish dessert, and I thought, whoever had squash for dessert? You know,
apparently
Turks do. Yeah, it was good. What about you, Heidi? What are you looking forward to in the fall as far as food goes?
In the immediate first part of fall, pressing all my apples into just juice cider. And we
do you have a press?
Yeah,
we do. Awesome.
I bought it for David's birthday during COVID. It was like $1,200.
Wow.
And it was so worth it.
That's some expensive apple juice.
No. It's we're getting the ROI because we do so much.
Sure.
David is a beekeeper, and so we have a lot of friends with orchards, and they'll say, oh yeah, you can raid our trees.
Sure.
And so we'll do like truckloads and then bring it home into 5-gallon buckets all over our yard. We're so bad. We're like the Clampets. But But it's like, I don't care, because guess what? We're winning all year long.
And it's so delicious.
Yeah.
So do you can it then, or do you freeze it, or what do you
freeze it, mm-hmm. and we lose some of the probiotic goodness by doing that.
Yeah.
But it's so good for your gut, because you know, you press everything.
Mm-hmm.
The cores and all the good the stuff
seeds
is in
and
the
everything.
Core.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the seeds, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we'll do pears as well with it, just throw it all in there, and it's phenomenally sweet. Like, how does nature make it that sweet? When you're chewing on an apple, it doesn't taste that sweet.
Right. Yeah.
But when you press it into a juice, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Ow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, wow.
I stand. But okay. I'm looking forward to doing stews, all my instant pot kind of deep stews and chilies, and all my squash is going to come online, and I'm going to stuff it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make soup.
Soup, any kind of soup.
I can't wait for that too.
Yeah.
I'm starting the soup night at Woman Hold the Key next month too.
Yay.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. You're not coming over for soup.
I don't know.
Linda sounded totally not into it.
Not well, a soup person?
I am. I totally am. And I was a host. I was with Celine last year, and we cooked all the soup together. And I just don't know if I'm going to do it this year. I don't know that I have time for it. But I might.
It's a lot of work.
I might surprise you. It's a lot of work. Yeah. But we'll see.
You'll probably come to some.
Oh, I'll come.
Yeah.
For sure. I'll come to eat soup. Yeah, for sure. So what about you, Elijah? What's your autumn thing?
So, you know, I don't know that it's like necessarily autumnal, but I'm working on a technique for a smoked jackfruit.
Oh my goodness.
Really, so far, been really nice. And I think we'll just continue to get a little bit better as I work on the texture. But it's a very neutral flavor.
So then I'm going to put that on like for a fake pulled pork?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So it actually cooks down to a texture that's very similar to a pulled
pork. That's what I've heard. I've never had it.
Yeah. It's nice. And then, you know, seasoned just the same way I would season any other barbecue, and just working to appease the vegetarians on the island to make sure I've got some for everybody.
Yeah, it's
so
important.
Yeah.
And if you need a taste tester, I'll
put out the signal.
Yeah.
If you crack that code, you could patent that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hope. I mean, there's a lot of folks like smoking jackfruit now, so I think it's more of dialing it in for both the kind that I can get readily, which is, you know, 10-pound cans from our distributor, number 10 cans rather, from the distributors. So far the tests have been promising. I'll say
well
that.
Good
that
that's
cool.
Exciting. That's very cool. Well, I've been picking pears,
and that's one does at this time of
as
year.
One does at this time of year. You know, I don't know if you know or not, but pears ripen from the inside out. So they don't ripen on the tree, and they ripen after you pick them. And a friend of mine has two huge pear trees. One is Comice, and the other one is Bartlett. I did find ripe Bartlett on the tree. They were soft and just perfect. I didn't find any Comice that were even, they were really hard.
Sure.
But then I took them home and did the, you know, brown paper bag trick, put them in there for a couple days, and they ripen and soften. And well, Comice isn't exactly a soft pear anyway to begin with, but it does soften. So I made a pear tart tatin the other day.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, man. I don't make my own puff pastry, to say the least. But it was really good. And then I made some pear cider. I came across a recipe for, surfing, looking at pear stuff. And I thought, oh, pear cider. Well, I don't want to make that, because I'm thinking hard cider, like we would think about here, you know. And it wasn't. It was like doing apple cider, hot apple cider, something like that. And it's the same thing. It's a little brown sugar, a little clove, a little bit of cinnamon.
Oh, yum.
And simmer it, you know. And then you have to press it through a sieve, of course, because you're putting all the pear, everything in there.
Yeah.
And letting it simmer for a couple hours, really. You let it simmer for a long time until it just is pure mush. And then strain it through a strainer and... It's kind of cloudy.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You know, it's not clear and sparkling, but man, is it good. I loved it. So that's kind of what I've been thinking about.
Save some for winter, too, so you can make hot toddies.
True, that's a good idea. Well, we'd like to take a minute here, take a short break, and say thank you to our wonderful sponsors.
The Vashon Island Chamber of Commerce creates opportunity for businesses and organizations to prosper while enriching the unique quality of life for every islander. We provide networking, education, and promotional opportunities, and produce events like Strawberry Festival, Vashon Halloween, and Winterfest.
Thank you to Windermere Real Estate, whose support makes our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at windermerevashon.com.
You've been getting kind of far away.
Hello. We are live. We were just talking over the PSAs because, holy mackerel, the levels are very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. So you're listening to Stirring the Pot on 101.9 Voice of Vashon. And we're talking about all things food, fall food mostly right now. Our guest in the studio today is Elijah Berry, and we're just talking about all kinds of stuff today. So one of the next things I want to talk about is, you know, I'm not a sports ball fan, never have been, really. I used to watch basketball a lot. I like basketball. But football or soccer or any of that, except when my kids were involved, you know, I did that. But it's a very popular pastime. And everybody, or a lot of people, are having parties. They're having gatherings. They're doing tailgates. They're doing come to my living room, come to my rec room. Let's watch the game together. So let's talk about some sports party food, whether you're going to eat it outside, whether you're going to eat it in the house or how you want to do that. One of the things that kind of makes me laugh is that one of the most popular things when I was growing up and in college and early adulthood, I guess, was the meatball thing. At every little potluck, you know, or there were always meatballs. And as Heidi says, a toothpick is involved. So it's great party food. But Celine has done a little bit of research on meatballs. And I've done a little bit myself.
Yeah.
And so I guess, how should we start? Let's just start talking. You know, tell me about the Turkish meatballs that you.
So the Turkish meatballs are called kefte.
Yes. And that's K-E-F-T-E, correct?
K-O with K-O. The dot on top.
With the hina hina.
Yep, little dots on top. Kefte. And it's, let's see, there are different varieties of it, but it has onions, but you kind of squeeze the juice of the onion. So you put grated onions and then lots of cumin, garlic, Italian parsley, and let's see, black pepper, Aleppo or Urfa pepper to give it a little bit of spiciness. And then they put a little bit of oil in there too. Some people put egg yolks in it. I don't like egg yolks in my meatballs.
Are these lamb? Are these beef? What do you use for meat?
Traditionally, it's usually lamb, ground lamb.
Right.
But we've also mixed health and health or 80-20. So like 80% lamb and 20% beef. So you can mix that. And there's, let's see. I know in Balkans also have cevapi, which is very similar to kefte. But the seasoning wise, but then they add pork in it too. So it's very similar the cooking wise. So there are different ways of cooking. You can either pan fry it, you can grill it, you can cook in red sauce, you can cook in a soup and make it soury with the way that you cook them. There's one that's really, it has a funny name when you translate things in from Turkish to here. It's called Lady's Tie. Kefte.
As in T-I-E?
No, thigh.
Oh, thigh.
Thigh, lady's thigh. Oh. I didn't hear it. Thigh. Yes.
Thigh, okay.
So it has a similar ingredients to kefte, but then it has cooked soft rice in it, and then it gets put on flour and egg yolk batter, and then fried. It's much more softer.
And does it have a sauce with? Do you do that with sauce or no?
No.
It's just the meatball.
It's just the meatball, and then it's served either with rice in Turkey. In Turkey, rice is always rice or fried potatoes or fried fries, but like it's a little bit thicker. So they kind of go together, and I'm just trying to think. So that's one of them, and. Oh, and then some people put baking soda or baking powder into meatballs, and then it makes the meatballs soft and fluffy.
You know, I've heard of people using that for tenderizing meat.
So
I think it must be the same idea. Yeah. Because it makes it, and I've tried it. It does actually really make it like a little bit more spongy and a little bit, it tastes really good.
Well, I like the idea of the lady thigh meatball. That's really interesting. That's a funny translation, isn't it?
It really is. It's I don't know where the name came from, but it's a very different meatball.
I haven't tried it
somewhere else. So,
for a football party, you could just make a bunch of meatballs and stick a toothpick in it, and people are, you could size it so that some meatballs are pretty big and it's more than one bite, but you could size them into
absolutely.
That would be really good. So, is there no garlic yogurt sauce with these meatballs?
Oh, you can always use a garlic yogurt sauce. Oh,
okay,
you know?
I'm glad to know that because.
You know, we put yogurt or garlic yogurt on everything.
I know you do.
In Turkish food.
It's so good. It's so good. And Elijah's some surprising things.
You are. This is, sounds oh, really no. weird.
So
but
good.
We do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I grew up in a sort of Scandinavian community in Montana. And we were big on Swedish meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows what a Swedish meatball is. They're so good. And I have recently become reacquainted with them. I was doing some cooking for someone for a while in their home, and he was elder, and one of the things that he requested was Swedish meatballs.
Oh.
So I made those, and he loved them, and so, you know, I made some for myself, too.
Yeah.
they were really good, and they're so easy to make, and it's just that kind of sour cream kind of thing, and parsley, and no garlic for the elder man, but garlic for me.
Yeah.
And most Scandinavians aren't too crazy about a lot of spice. So, you know, I'm a little different in that regard. But one thing that I read up on and learned just recently is that Swedish meatballs actually came from Turkey.
No way, really?
Okay, so back in the day, when Peter the Great was conquering everyone from Russia, Peter the Great was conquering everyone, and he conquered England in some, at that time, it was like the 1700s, and then because he was afraid, he exiled himself. This was King Charles the 12th.
Okay.
And he exiled himself to Turkey, and he stayed in Turkey for 5 years.
Oh.
And you know, he wasn't being punished or anything. He was treated quite well when he was there. And then it was safe to go home again. So he went back home and to Sweden. And he brought home a recipe for kofta, which then became Swedish meatballs because the local people put their own spin on it. And they put some sour cream and they put some dairy products and some their own Swedish thing on. So I just thought that was really interesting because we talk a lot about the intersection of cultures in food and how we have so many different cultures in the same dish.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you look at meatballs, we're talking multi-generational, historic food.
Absolutely,
from everybody has a meatball.
Yes.
I mean, there's Vietnamese meatballs and then there's Italian and there's French.
Yeah.
And everybody has a meatball.
Yeah.
And
different spin on the same
ingredients.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was really quick to credit the Turkey people.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah,
I thought it was.
I thought it was really interesting.
Makes sense, though.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And I wonder what else he brought home.
Sure.
Because Swedish cooking, you know, is not known to be. Now it's better because food is easier to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But back then, you know, in my Norwegian community, we always talked about how every church dinner and every potluck, all the food was white.
Sure.
You know, it was cream gravies and potatoes and
lutefisk.
Yes, you know about lutefisk. I love lutefisk.
I've been warned.
Oh, my kids just shudder. They just shudder because their grandpa tried to teach them to like it, and they just can't. I do like it, but nobody will eat it with me, or will they come to my house if I cook it? So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things that I remember quite well. But so, anything that you think about, Elijah, for potluck parties or sports stuff? You know, besides your wonderful ribs.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's a different form of ribs, actually. So for big events like parties, I really like they call it a party rib, which is just like maybe a St. Louis style spare rib, but they're pre-sliced before you cook them.
Okay.
So you can kind of sauce them individually, and then you end up with a large tray of these completely coated, ready to go, just kind of nice to...
Kind of finger food.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Messy finger food.
And they cook a lot quicker, too. So you can just kind of throw a bunch of them in the smoker, and away you go.
And so if I'm a home cook without a smoker... I can put them in my oven, can't I?
Yeah, I mean, you'll be missing out on a lot of the flavor because there's...
The smoke.
There's no smoke.
Right.
But I think a lot of people are more afraid of liquid smoke than they should be. Like, it seems like an odd ingredient to pass in the store. I'm sure Thriftway has it.
They do.
But all liquid smoke is it's exactly what the name sounds like. They will, you know, burn up some wood, and then they condense the actual smoke, and then that liquid that they get is, in fact, liquid smoke.
Really?
So a little goes a long way, but, you know.
So then do I put that in my sauce? Is that what I do?
Yeah, or a marinade or wherever you're kind of looking to get more of that smoky flavor.
So if I'm a home cook and I'm taking for granted most people don't have a smoker. A lot of people do. My son does, for one. But would I marinate the ribs first?
So I don't really marinate ribs. You can, like I have done that in the past, but really they're going to be in for so long that whatever seasoning you put on, I'll usually dry rub about an hour beforehand.
Okay.
And I mean, I've smoked in ovens. Like, it's just, if you've got the time and the patience, you can do it anywhere. Because really the key is just that low and slow and giving it enough time for everything to sort of break down and start getting all nice and tender. But, you know, the difference between a smoker and a standard Weber grill is mostly patience. So you can use any barbecue grill as a smoker as long as you're willing to hang out with it. And the smokers that are purpose-built just tend to be larger or have more space for them.
Well, that I'm glad you said that about Weber because I'm a big Weber fan. And I remember making smoked turkey. And it took forever to do it. And it was very low and only a few coals. And you had to keep adding a coal and adding a coal and staying right there all day. But it was really part of the ceremony of cooking it. And, and it was fun. And it wasn't like a chore. So, Weber has my heart.
Well, and a nice trick if all you have is a Weber grill is to... Just find a way to sort of segment all of your charcoal off to one side.
Right.
Because that's
right.
where you'll get into trouble is if you're under that direct heat for too long.
So I put mine in a circle. Stack. Mine were in a circle around the very edge of it, and the turkey was in the middle.
Exactly.
And it was just really, really, really good. Yeah. I loved it. I only did it once, but it was good. I want to jump back to sports food a little bit for my contribution. I made stromboli the other day. I had a friend who was kind of having a difficult time and needing, I thought she needed some food. So I made a stromboli and it was so delicious and so easy to make that I want to tell people you should make these and you should have them on your football table or there. It's so easy. So all I did was I got frozen pizza dough because nobody had any fresh pizza dough in town. It was all sold out for some reason everywhere I looked. So I got frozen pizza dough and let it thaw out and then roll it out into a rectangle. And I put some homemade marinara sauce on top of that and then just layered things like pepperoni and salami and provolone. I put a few olives, a few pepperoncini, some parsley, sprinkled it with some herbs. And then roll that up really tight. Fold the ends in first and then roll it up from the long side. Don't roll it from the short side. And brush it with some egg white and bake it. And it stays in the oven about, I think, about 40 minutes at about 375 probably. And then it comes out of the oven all golden and beautiful. And of course, the pan is full of pepperoni grease, and you know, which is fine.
Not to waste.
Yeah, right. So I let it cool and then sliced it, and it was delicious room temperature. You don't have to eat it hot.
Hot, yeah. That's good.
And I served some of the marinara sauce on the side for dipping. So I thought at the time, I knew we were going to talk about autumn food.
Yeah.
And football food. And I thought that would be a really good thing to put on the table.
Absolutely.
And easy. It's not hard. And all the ingredients, you're not really cooking. I mean, you kind of are, but you know, you're layering things that we all love. Mm-hmm. And you can use, you can use prosciutto if you want to. You can use different kinds of cheeses. Yeah. You can do whatever you want.
You can make it fancy.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, I mean, you can do whatever you want to. So that was just kind of an addition. And Heidi, did you have something that might work for football food?
I'm probably too esoteric and we don't watch a lot of football. I bake some rosemary crackers, you know, those big flatbread crackers.
Those are good. Yeah.
Peas.
I've had those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people are not fussy when they come to a football or any kind of a gathering at your home. And homemade crackers are kind of a luxury.
Yeah.
And they're so good. I've had your homemade crackers and they're really, really good. Love them. Well, let's get down to business here. We want to talk to Elijah for a bit and find out just who he is. Elijah, I know you're our favorite bakery guy. And for those of you who don't know, Elijah is a fairly new owner. I think new is probably, you're not exactly new.
Yeah, we're going, I think this is 9 months.
9 months. Yeah, you're almost a year. So welcome. I know that you've lived in Vashon longer than that.
I have.
You've lived here how long?
I think about 9 years.
Have you?
Yeah.
And prior to bakery, you were doing some remote
work. So I worked for, I've had a number of odd little careers, but I kind of stumbled into this tech and software sales world, which combined my love of not working super hard with my love of being paid well for
it. Yeah, so that works. Yeah. That's really good. Yeah. Well, so can you tell us, I know that you said you were born and raised in Missouri.
Yes,
tell us a little bit about your childhood, and I know you had a rather famous father.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, my family's interesting. Both my father and my sister became famous in relatively like small circles. So they're well known among a small number of people. So I grew up in the home in Missouri that my great grandfather built in 1872.
Wow.
He was a freed slave from Oklahoma. Had gotten fought down with the Union Army to Vicksburg and then came back with his troop to rural Missouri. And that's where, you know, he raised a family, where my grandfather raised a family, where my father decided to, was both born. And then after his kind of wild hair adventures, both my mother and my father, they met. And I kind of jokingly call it a cult because it bothered them, frankly. But it was just a kind of non-offensive Christian group in the 60s.
Okay.
Vaguely religious.
Non-offensive.
Careful when I say cult in certain circles. But yeah, so they had met, and my father at a certain point became a Russian Orthodox priest. So when we talk about Greek food or Turkish food, you get a lot of that in the various Orthodox circles. You know, I think the connection to it, I was thinking about this because you mentioned that wanting a little family background, and that there was no tie to any sort of a bakery until my sister actually was the one that reminded me that this group that my parents were in owned, you know, a dozen of them across the country.
Really?
Yeah, Brother Juniper's Bakery. Of which there is one still extant in Memphis, owned by a former member of this group. And it's apparently in my blood. Who knew?
Who knew? Have you been there?
I have. Years ago, I'd gotten back from a year I spent in Antarctica and needed a place to sort of crash for a moment. Mm-hmm. And I found myself on a motorcycle in Memphis at like 8 p.m. at night. And I called my dad and said, "Hey, I'm not like fully sure how this has happened, but I'm in Memphis. Do you know anyone?" And the man who owned Brother Juniper's in Memphis, Jonathan Copeland, you know, got on the phone. He said, "Oh, you're Father Moses now?" "Yeah, of course. Like, we were kids together. You want to work at my restaurant? You want to live in my house? Like, I'll kick my son out of his bedroom." Like, we'd never met, and there we go.
Oh, wow. Serendipity.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got to spend some time with the folks there in Memphis.
Well, how wonderful. And so was your father, was he like a regional guy? Didn't he travel?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. And he had, just maybe not super surprising, but the Orthodox Church in the U.S. is very ethnically divided.
Mm-hmm.
So not in a negative way, but you hear about the Russian Orthodox Church or the Greek Orthodox, and people assume that they're very, very different. And they're really, it's the same words and the same things and said in different languages.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, there's not been as much of a convert community as you see with some of the Protestant denominations. Oh, okay. So it was actually pretty remarkable that my father was an African American who'd found this, you know, traditional mm-hmm. Orthodox faith. Mm-hmm. And because of who he is as a person and sort of the personality that he was able to lend to people and bring to the world, he became very well known in those circles, both for his church ministry, mm-hmm. but also for the family ministry that he did. And by that, I mean, we have this huge collection. My family just kept everything. We didn't want to move houses. We didn't want to leave anything behind. Yeah. So I grew up around, like, you know, the neck chains and padlocks my slave ancestors had just kind of hung on to or found over the years.
Oh, my goodness.
And my father ran a little museum of that history mm-hmm. just to sort of, you know, not as a reminder of hurt that was done, but a reminder of sort of like the path that we had taken and mm-hmm. where we were, had moved mm-hmm. on from there.
Mm. Interesting. Oh, I hate to break right now, but we have to take a little break and say thank you to our sponsors.
Support provided by Hawthorne Stereo, sellers of exceptional hi-fi since 1946. Hawthorne specializes in new and used stereo music systems from vintage turntables to high-end digital streaming and beyond. You can find them on the web at hawthornestereo.com.
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at windermerevashon.com.
Hello, and we're back. You're listening to Stirring the Pot on 101.9 FMLP in Uptown, Vashon, Washington. And we're sitting here talking with Elijah Berry, getting some information from him about who he is and what he does. And we're finding some very interesting things, one of them being that Elijah spent some time in Antarctica. And I am just so curious about that because Elijah's had a very wandering path career-wise, many, many successes, different kinds of jobs, different things that you wouldn't necessarily think were connected. Hmm. And they've all been very interesting. So what happened?
I say I've achieved mediocrity in a range of fields. So this is good, which is not, you know, I don't think of that as self-deprecating, honestly.
Yeah, I get it.
It's the direction that life has gone, but Antarctica is definitely an interesting chapter.
Uh-huh.
It's also my story of how I was, you know, one of the few graduates, my first undergraduate degree in 2008,
mm-hmm.
And I completely missed the financial crisis. I was
gone.
So I got back after a year in Antarctica and said, hey guys, how's it been? How's the year? Oh no, really?
Oh, what?
Not bad.
But
yeah, I was...
How'd you get there?
How'd I get there? I was going to college in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Okay.
And I had decided I was
going to... Ooh, Hatch green chili.
Love it on everything. Chili chicken Alfredo remains one of my favorite dishes.
Yeah, I got it.
So good. But I was buying a motorcycle from a guy in Denver, mm-hmm. and the U.S. Antarctic program is headquartered in Denver. So as I was sort of killing some time up there, I had heard about them, could have been passing. I went by the office, which was, you know, it's not a reception area. This is not an office where they're expecting people to come in. But I said, hey, like, what do you guys, like, Antarctica, that sounds neat. Like, I'm about to get this, like, super productive and useful liberal arts degree. So, like, maybe manual labor is for me. And they, you know, talked it up. They said, it's so exciting. This is great. And I eventually ended up with a contract as, I think my actual title was general laborer.
So okay.
Just like a completely nondescript. The whole Antarctic program sort of has these tiers of people who are down mm-hmm. there. And at the very top, you have the scientists and the researchers mm-hmm. and, you know, the wonderful work that they're doing. And then everyone else is supporting them with the tiers
sure.
of plumbers and heavy mechanics and very specialized, knowledgeable, you know,
people that make it work.
People who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then under that, you have the labor pool.
Okay.
Which is what I ended up being part of. And that's, you know, I was doing carpentry work. And then mm-hmm. you've got all the folks who work in the food service and the mm-hmm. kitchen side of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the food down at McMurdo Station, at least, it's interesting in how uninteresting it is. It is very much a college cafeteria that just sort of happens to be, you know, at the base of an active volcano in Antarctica. So a lot of the folks that come down there, because it's the easier jobs to get, or at least the less specialized, mm-hmm. end up doing either what I was doing, and I got very lucky to be with the carpenters, or they're working in, you know, again, these are college students who leave college in, you say, Massachusetts, and end up working in an oddly similar cafeteria in Antarctica, where a lot of the food is frozen for obvious reasons. It's very easy to keep frozen food down there.
I thought that was really funny. Before the show, we were talking about it, and I said, I'm really curious about the food down there. He said, well, it's pretty easy to freeze it.
Yeah. I mean, during the winter, I'll skip ahead a little bit, but the station population in the winter drops to around 130 people. So you're going from, you know, 24 hours of sunlight, and there's people coming mm-hmm. and going, and there's planes that come in every day, and those planes bring in the freshies, which is the only fresh food that comes in.
Okay.
So when those planes stop, the food gets a bit worse and mm-hmm. a little harder. I helped run the tomato system in the very small, maybe half the size of the studio grow chamber that we had down in Antarctica. Mm. But the thing that I loved the most was they did a burger bar. So three days a week, maybe 2 days a week, they would do one of the bars at the station, of which there were three for mm-hmm. you know, a town, air quotes, of 900 people. There are three bars at McMurdo Station for different groups. Again, the tiers. There's the old Quonset hut where the cigars are smoked and chess is played and the researchers have their time. And then there's the more kind of roughneck bar where the hard workers go. And then there's the college bar for all of us. And the college bar would these terrible little Cisco. I love Cisco, one of our vendors at the bakery.
Yes.
Shouldn't knock Cisco. But they would
but
have
the burgers
these,
weren't that great.
They weren't. But they were cherished because it was
a
food item, and you could mm-hmm. take it back to your room. So you would go, and they would sell you a maximum of three burgers. And
did you have fries and all that to go with it? No, just a burger.
Just burgers. Mm-hmm. but we were thankful for them.
Sure.
And I would always eat one there and then put two of them in my windowsill of my little dorm room, which acted as like a little deep freeze.
Sure.
Oh my gosh.
So very interesting place to be. Not an interesting place to eat necessarily.
Yeah.
Unless you're at the field camps. Those were much better food.
So did you get to travel around from different stations?
I did. And that's sort of what made it so lucky to end mm-hmm. up as a carpenter's helper. Mm. Most people who go, I'd probably say north of 90% in Antarctica, really never leave the station because that is where almost all the logistics happens. And it's mm-hmm. such a inhospitable place that it's difficult to have camps, but the carpenters actually go and, you know, we would set up these little field stations. So when, you know, next time you're seeing a documentary about Antarctica and they've got the intrepid scientists, you know, hiking out of their helicopters to go to their new base, what they never pan the camera is like the four or five guys in Carhartts who just like built the little tents for them that are probably drinking a beer and like waving and watching. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of moments of like, you can just see the, you know, scientist talking to his grad student of, we've reached this, you know, inhospitable plane where no human has set forth, and just off camera, there's some like yokels throwing footballs around, like, waiting for their pickup ride to go back to the station.
It's all in the PR.
Exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's all the image of it.
How many people were there?
So during the winter, McMurdo has a little north of 600, I believe, at the time, and it's a rotating crew. Mm-hmm. The U.S. station McMurdo is really the main like embarkation point for the whole continent. Mm-hmm. It's the only place that has that large of a runway.
And how long were you there?
So I was there for a year.
Okay.
It was originally a 5-month contract, but if they have convinced or tricked you to stay for a single day of the winter, they've effectively convinced you to stay for the entirety of it because you can't leave.
Because you can't go.
Yep. So this, I remember him very well, and I won't say his name, but he he promised me a promotion if I agreed to stay for the winter, and then promptly hired nobody underneath me. Yep. So that was exactly the trick that I got
played. That's how this works.
Yeah. So yeah, I was there for a year. So mm-hmm. I saw 4 months of sun mm-hmm. and 4 months of darkness and transitions in between.
Wow, that's really interesting. Really. Yeah. Where did you go from there?
So from there, I actually moved directly to Memphis.
Okay.
So that was sort of, I got back to Missouri and was kind of shell-shocked mm-hmm. And, you know, knew some folks in Memphis, ended up living there and teaching high school in Mississippi. And
that's
then
right.
went to nursing school in Alabama.
Yes. And
came here.
And then you were a nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the federal government.
Fascinating.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay, so now we're on Vashon.
Now we're on Vashon, thankfully.
Yeah.
Where I plan to stay.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I'm really glad to hear that, Elijah. So for those of you who don't know, our Vashon Baking Company is a treasure of Vashon Island. It has been for, I don't know how long it's been in business. Do you know?
About 40 years.
Yeah, yeah, it's a long time.
We are the same age, oddly enough.
Wow, interesting. So you met Samantha, the former owner, is that right?
Yeah.
And just sort of happenstance, tell us how the bakery life came to you.
Sure. So Sam and I had been friends for a while. Mm-hmm. She was very helpful when my friend Steven and I were starting the pretty short-lived but smoothie stand that used to be near Giraffe.
You did that?
We did.
Oh, I wish it were still there.
And Sam was the commissary.
I love that place.
I've still got the recipes kicking around, so that there may be a return at some point.
Okay, good. Okay.
But Sam was our commissary kitchen.
Okay.
And got to know her through that process.
Uh-huh.
And she had sort of, you know, made noises on and off that she might want to split up her businesses because she also has a glass bottle creamery and was looking for
with
something
the best
that was
ice
a little
cream.
More. Oh, so good.
Yeah,
yeah, the
so
black
good.
Licorice is my birthday flavor that she brings back.
The first
probably not
time,
just for me, but I know I make a lot of noise about it.
It wouldn't be for me. Yeah. But the first
might,
time
it might be just for me.
The first time I had her ice cream was in her little shop next to the studio, and I had a yellow plum sorbet.
Mm.
And that morning or the day before, she had gone out and picked the plums and made the sorbet. It killed me. Yeah. It's so good.
Well, she is amazing.
Yeah, she is.
And has been a great mentor. But yeah, I mentioned it to her. She'd mentioned it to me, rather, that she had been thinking about it. And then maybe 6 months later, I had reached a point where I knew I did not want to continue working in like tech just as a field. To quote my mom, who I do often, she said, yeah, you know, I always thought you were too much of a person to keep being a tech salesperson. Which I say carefully because I don't completely agree with that sentiment. But I had left that and I just went into the bakery for my normal coffee and cheese croissant. And I said, Sam, were you serious about maybe selling the bakery? She said, yeah, I was. I said, do you think it would be insane for me to just do that?
Yeah.
She said, no, not insane.
Given your background?
I mean, yeah, you went to Antarctica.
So you definitely
prepared.
It
can't be more insane than that.
Yeah. But that was it. So she said, yep, I think it would work. And I said, I'll do it as long as you'll train me. And honestly, to her credit, she created a really strong program there.
Mm.
So the recipes, I've done very little to change. The timing of everything is very similar to how she had it set up, and I've just done my best over this year to not depart from the standards that she set. So I lucked into it, and I'm very quick to correct people when they say, oh, you started a bakery. Oh, no, I didn't do that. I'm not that wild.
Well, it's a wonderful place, and I know that you, without a baking background, had to have kind of a steep learning curve, I would imagine, under the tutelage of Sam.
Yeah, and I went to the San Francisco Baking Institute. They have a 10-week sort of
when
very
you were gonna
intensive,
buy or,
yes, afterwards.
Okay.
So I decided to buy it from her. I said, let's, you know, find a program. All the ones closer were a year, and I really wasn't. I've been to too much college already, and I've used so little of it that I was a little reticent to go back for that.
Yeah.
But 10 weeks in San Francisco got me at least enough to speak the lingo. And then with her tutelage and Crystal, who's been a fixture at the bakery for you know, about as long as I've been alive, if not maybe a little bit less time. Crystal agreed to stay on and kind of continue to be that support. So
Crystal makes the pie.
Oh yeah, Crystal's the pie maven, and keeps me in line, and you know, makes sure that every time I do something wrong, I don't even know if she's even in the building or not, but she will pop up and say, "Are you sure? That's how you want to do that?"
Well, you did some remodeling and sort of upgrading. I noticed you've got some new art in the lobby in the what do we call that? We call that
Foyer.
Okay, well, let's say foyer.
Yeah.
Reception area?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Michelle Lasselin, who is the You as an Animal painter at the farmer's market.
Yes,
had also been a dear friend of mine.
She's awesome.
And we joke about it a lot now because I think we both think that the other person's getting the raw deal. Where I said, you know, you'll be the artist in residence, as you can sell your art and we'll keep it on the walls.
That's wonderful.
And she said, you know, okay, well, you're sure that's not an issue for you? So we both, you know, I get this wonderful art in the bakery and she gets to have some gallery space.
She did the poster this year for Strawberry Festival.
She did. So not the official poster, but she did.
No, it wasn't the official.
Wonderful kind of.
I love the one
Richard
she did.
Scarry, yeah. Where's Waldo yeah. kind of yeah. busy yeah. city.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's just beautiful. It's so fun. And you see all the people you know on there.
Love it so much. Yep.
Yeah.
So
tell
too.
Me about the baking. I know right now you're looking for a baker. If there's any bakers out there who want to work with Elijah.
Yeah, that was news I received about 20 minutes before getting here.
So oh, my goodness.
We're suddenly looking for a morning baker a couple days a week.
Yeah.
So, you know, come by, let me know.
Yeah.
So I'll be doing that in the meantime, which mm-hmm. is completely fine.
Are you comfortable with that now?
Yeah, much okay. more so.
Okay, good.
Again, I think partly owing to the systems that Samantha had set mm-hmm. up. And partly owing to, like, I kind of jokingly call it the confidence that, like, liberal arts will give you. That, like, yeah, it's not, I'm sure there are people who are doing this who I'm, you know, comparable to. So I yeah. can do, I could probably yeah. do this.
What's been your biggest challenge?
Staffing. You know, I think that if you talk yeah. to any small business yeah. owner on the island, maybe anywhere, mm-hmm. that's kind of the perpetual issue. So we just had the big changing of the guard mm-hmm. with college students going back to college sure. and the high school students leaving and mm-hmm. finding folks. And, mm-hmm. you know, the margins at a small business also aren't amazing. So it's this kind of difficult
right.
balance of,
yeah.
like, I've worked bad jobs and I've worked for very little pay. And I, mm-hmm. I try to make sure that people are compensated in a way that
good.
At least is motivation. But, yeah. you know, that is the difficulty. And
but there is a certain margin. Yeah. yeah. I know I ran into you at Little Cup, I don't know, 2-3 weeks mm-hmm. ago. And Elijah was sitting there having coffee and had his computer and typing away. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, staffing, scheduling." Yep. You were scheduling everybody.
My usual stress.
So what's your favorite thing at the bakery? Like, do you have a favorite pastry or is there something you just eating too much of?
So yeah, favorite is time-based for me. So it depends on okay. what I've been gorging myself on.
Uh-huh.
I've been on a maple bar kick lately.
Oh, man.
We did a very slight change to the prep process on those, and I think oh. they've been coming out really beautifully now.
So what's the difference?
So a little less time on the bake.
Okay.
And then just a little different preparation for the egg wash itself to get okay. a more consistent coat.
And can
very
you
very small changes.
Would you can you tell us how you make the frosting, how you make the glaze? Or is that a secret? Is that a trade secret?
It's not a secret, but nor is it necessarily that interesting. It's largely maple syrup.
Yeah.
To which, you know, we add sugar and a few other maybe more secret ingredients, uh-huh. which I'll use as a cover for not remembering the recipe off the top of my head.
Very smooth.
Secret even to me.
That's very good. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the big difference is that the croissant dough being used.
It
that's
is.
What people aren't used to
yeah.
with any sort of maple bar.
It's really true.
We don't have donuts, but I think mm-mm. we've got something a little bit
I
nicer
do too.
Or
and,
different.
And that glaze is maple.
Yes.
That's what you taste. You don't taste
strong
any.
Maple.
I don't even taste the sugar. I mean, it's sweet, but you don't think, oh, sugar, sweet. You think, maple. And then that little crunch of the croissant dough. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's my favorite thing there.
Sugar and butter. It's hard to beat.
It's hard to beat. It's really hard to beat. Tell me about your learning curve with regard to the general public and how all that's going.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the reasons I was even willing and open to the idea mm-hmm. of establishing this business is how strongly I do feel about the community on Vashon and
thank
how
you.
Much I have appreciated over these 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
So no surprises there is that mm-hmm. people are very both loving of the institutions that they have on the island mm-hmm. and willing to, you know, overlook some of our little foibles. So if the mm-hmm. the coffee is cold or a pastry is burnt, people will just tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And come and say, "Hey, you know, mm-hmm. Elijah, I had this there. I didn't think it was as good as you probably wanted it to be."
Mm-hmm.
And gives us time to do little course corrections and fix these things. Because I know they've been bumps.
Yeah.
But
I think overall, we're all just delighted that you're here. And I know I come in there as often as I dare. I need to stay away pretty much because it's so good. And I'll have one of those and one of those. And why don't I have two of those?
Yeah.
You know, it's delicious. And I'm so glad that you're there and open and providing a wonderful service to the community.
Another 40 years.
Thank you for coming, Elijah. We really appreciate your taking the time. And it's time for us to say goodbye already. I told you the hour was going to go
fast.
I know.
I'm hungry now.
And thank you for listening to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.